Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into Players Only, Thursday nights at 6 o'clock on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5, The Fan. Here's the bad boy from Bayonne.
Chiefs do such a great job of pre-snap movement, shifts, and motions to declare what the defense is doing.
Chiefs Radio Network color analyst, Danon Hughes.
Good evening, Chiefs Kingdom. Welcome back, Players Only. This is Danon Hughes. I am in the building and ready to go for this wild card week slash bye week version of Players Only. Been on the air all season long, almost completing my fifth season with this Players Only show. So it's been an absolute blast, an incredible run, but it's not over yet. We get an opportunity this weekend to be fans of football and watch everyone else go to battle while we get to chill on the sidelines and wait to see who we play. We'll be talking more about each and every team that could be a possible opponent here at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium the following week for the divisional round. But before we get to that, remember the phone lines, text lines are open, 913-586-7695. Last week, I've been juggling and contemplating how I wanted to open up this show. If you've been a listener most of this season, the first quarter of the show, we're usually recapping the last game of the season or last game that week, going through interviews, speaking. Obviously, when you're 15-1 going into the last week, just about every show was positive. Every show had some juice to it. Great interviews, great energy. I go in the locker room after the game, interview a couple of players, sometimes three, and you were able to hear some of those interviews if you did not listen to the broadcast. By the way, even through the playoffs, you can listen to our broadcast on the Odyssey app or 96.5 The Fan. Mute your TVs, listen to the best in the business and Mitch Holtis, and then I as his sidekick on the side, as well as Dan Israel and Josh Klingler on the sideline. I feel like I get a lot of text messages, get a lot of tweets, posts that they love the energy and the information that we bring in the booth. So dial into that. I feel like there's a bonus, not trying to throw anybody under the bus and Tony Romo or any of those guys. But if you're a Chiefs fan and you want to hear the angle from the Chiefs side, still unbiased on both sides. If we're playing bad, we're going to speak it. If we're playing great, we're going to speak that as well. But the energy and information that Mitch brings and I bring as well, I feel like is definitely beneficial. So make sure next week, because we won't have it this week, next week you do that. But the Chiefs went up to the Mile High City, did not play well as a unit, and as I mentioned, I was struggling and whether I even wanted to talk about this game. It almost feels like if I was on air for the first week of the season and had to talk about the fourth preseason game. Just didn't seem like it was anything substantial. They are a playoff team. They are a top defense, and they were playing for their lives, their season's lives, against mostly our number twos. And the result showed that. 38-0, the Denver Broncos were able to win. The positive is that the Bengals, if you didn't see the clips on Twitter. I reposted them on Facebook and Twitter. They were absolutely hilarious. Watching the Bengals watch our game and just be dejected by the outcome, and recognizing that the next day they would have trash bags in hand, cleaning out their lockers, and their season would be over. And it's no one's fault but their own. Contrary to all the whiners and criers online that are Cincinnati Bengals fans that are talking about us, and I even saw Travis Kelce on his New Heights podcast having to address the fact that the Bengals fans thought we just basically caved for the last week, mainly because we didn't want to see them. That's a bunch of baloney, and they know it. They're just reaching. But the fact remains is you lost to the Patriots at home in week one. You won four games in 3 months and actually won five games in the final 5 weeks of the season. So that basically, with your record, you won four games in 3 months of the season, and you lost to the Patriots home opener. So it's your own fault, Cincinnati Bengal fans. It has nothing to do with us. In no way, shape, or form, contrary to maybe some of the supposed football purists, in no way, shape, or form is it anyone else's responsibility to help another team in the NFL, in any professional sports. Heck, in any college sport now that we have a 12-team playoff and a situation where conferences would love to see more of their teams in the playoffs in college. And then in the pros, it's just professional football. It's professional sports. We're not supposed to do something for someone else. No one cares. We were not trying to uplift the AFC West by now having three teams in the postseason. No one cares about that. No one ever talks about that. I believe, and you've heard me say in recent weeks, especially coming into this season, no one expected the AFC West to be what I believe and what now is shown to be true, the best division in the AFC and possibly, arguably, the second best division in all of professional football. You might want to boost up the NFC North because of the level of play by their three playoff teams. You can make an argument on each side based on schedule and the tough schedules that each had to face, as well as the Chiefs playing the longest season. The Chiefs are in this division, so we can't put them aside and just gauge the NFC North versus the Raiders, the Broncos, and the Chargers. No, the Chiefs are in this division, and we have to factor into that. So many people could make the argument that the AFC West was the toughest division in all of professional football. I wouldn't knock that argument, but I could also see the NFC North having a say-so as well. Fact remains is the Chiefs are the cream of the crop. We lost last week against the Denver Broncos, but I don't think anything from that game is indicative of where we'll be next week in the divisional round. I don't think any takeaways from that game should cause any concern to the Chiefs kingdom. And I think what we'll see is a cleaner, healthier, fresher, more version of the Chiefs, specifically when you talk about the football that they played in the three games in 11 days. And going along with my point earlier about having a tough schedule, the NFL tried to put every single hurdle possible in front of the Chiefs en route to a possible three-peat. When you consider playing the team that you played in the AFC Championship as the opening week, playing a known and heated rival in week two, then fast-forwarding down the season, having a week six bye, which would make the run to the Super Bowl roughly 17 straight weeks. Had the Chiefs not had a bye as the number one seed, you would have had 17 straight weeks of football to get to the Super Bowl. And by the way, as you got towards the final quarter of the season, we're going to throw three games in 11 days at you. And by the way, we're going to have three of your final four games on the road against AFC opponents. Oh, by the way, all of which were playoff contenders and now playoff participants. That tells you about the mindset of the NFL. So all the people that want to throw out the favoritism and the referees and the calls and the scripts and the blah, all that other junk, are just jealous because amidst facing all of that artillery, facing all of those bullets, the Chiefs came out at 15-2. I still consider them 15-1, but they had to play that last game. So we'll say 15-2 on the season. When we get to the hot fire take, I'm going to recap one of my takes from last week and add a little juice to it in regards to the coaching. But I feel like this is an opportunity where we can exhale a little bit, reflect on the season, but recognize also the greatness that we've seen thus far. The last point that I'll make in going back to that Denver Broncos game is, as I mentioned, I went into the locker room, got an opportunity to interview. This is the one week where it just seemed weird trying to interview two or three guys. Most of the guys were ready to get on the bus. Everybody was happy. Shamari Connor, I believe, was the only injury that was sustained in that game, which is a huge bonus. I have three keys to victory that I go through right before kickoff. The last one was to stay healthy. So the fact that we played a playoff team and we remained healthy for the most part was a huge bonus. And now that healthy gets to show itself with two extra weeks of rest and practice, halfway practice, et cetera. But I went into the locker room and I had to pull aside Nazi Johnson. I think he's had an up and down season. He's been part of a very young core at the defensive back position. Let's hear from Nazi. Here with Nazi Johnson. Nazi, obviously this game, you guys play the entire season for an opportunity for a lot of the guys to rest in this game. One of those guys wasn't you, but you got a lot of opportunity on the field. Speak to the mindset coming into this game, and although the outcome wasn't where you guys wanted it to be, still part of the big picture.
Yeah, we treat this game like any other game. The people that was up had the mindset of going in there and executing the game plan. We came up short, but I feel like everybody went out there and just executed. We left some plays out there, but ultimately we just battled, and I think that's a good sign from our defense.
Yeah, I've noticed over the past few years during the Super Bowl runs, it seems like when you've had this situation, there's been somebody that has warranted, not just the playing time during this type of game, but also contributing in the postseason, in part because of the experience they had in this game. I mean, the experience, full speed experience against a playoff caliber team is immeasurable.
Yeah, it's something that you need because this is the closest thing to a playoff atmosphere. And for me to be out there with the guys as a corner, it felt really good. I left some plays out there, but ultimately I was competing out there and it was just fun to be out there.
And now you get to turn the page, and it's playoff football, but you guys get a very necessary, very well-deserved rest before you have to dial in to whomever you will play. But, I mean, talk about that. I mean, you got 17 weeks, 18 weeks now where you've bought yourself time to be able to get that coveted bye week and how that can help you guys to reach your goal.
I mean, the team put in the work to get this rest, and everybody is going to use it the right way, and we're going to attack it. But ultimately, it's good that we have this rest because we can rest our main guys. Everybody can, even the backup players can rest a little bit as well, and we all can come in as healthy in the next second round of the playoffs.
I think that's a great mindset. Great interview by Nazi Johnson. Staying focused. And for anyone who believes that because we lost 38-0 against the Denver Broncos, but that in some way, shape, or form, there's going to be less confidence by some guys, I wouldn't say it would be less confidence. I'd say it'd just be more reality in the work that's necessary for them to play a top-shelf team in the playoffs. And you don't have the luxury of a growth opportunity when you're talking about postseason play. But you can't tell me that Nazi Johnson, Joshua Williams, Christian Roland Wallace that was out there on the field, Keith Taylor that was out there on the field, Jaden Hicks as defensive backs, didn't get better by having to face for 50, 60 plays in a game Cortland Sutton, Marvin Mims Jr., Lil Jordan Humphrey, Devon Vele. These guys that were making plays in that game, that is immeasurable. We're not talking about a fourth preseason game where guys are facing guys that are likely to be on the street the next week. We're talking about top shelf offensive weapons, tall trees at the wide receiver position, a basic defensive plan where when it was man-to-man, it was easy to see. When it was zone, it was easy to see. And it was just mano-a-mano. Yes, they won, but the experience was immeasurable. And it was good to hear that he had that mindset, that most of the guys, even the chatter around the locker room, there weren't any downheads in the locker room. They just realized it was a necessary evil to get through this game, weather that storm up in Denver, give credit where it's due for the Denver Broncos with a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix to be able to elevate themselves after losing two straight games. I had said earlier, or I should say last week prior to that game, that I thought it was gutless by the Denver Broncos to not go for two against the Cincinnati Bengals when they had a potential opportunity to win that ball game the week before and eliminate the Cincinnati Bengals from playoff contention and put themselves in the playoffs where they would have had an opportunity to rest some guys against us. It worked well for them. They didn't seem to have sustained any injuries in our game, and they'll go in strong against their opponent this week, which will be the Buffalo Bills, and we'll talk more about that. But remember, the phone lines, text lines are open, 913-586-7695. We're going to put to bed that matchup. But when we come back, we got the hot fire, spitfire takes. And I want to talk about giving some grades out this season. We got to do regular season grades, position by position. This seems to be the week to do it.
You're listening to Players Only with Dana Hughes on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Feeling hot, hot, hot. Feeling hot, hot, hot.
Because I spit hot fire.
Woo! I'll call me super hot boy. 100 degrees leather jacket. Because I'm super hot boy.
Oh! All right, we are back. Players Only, second quarter of the show. I'm your host, Danan Hughes. You can follow me on Twitter/X at DAHughesGuy83 or on Instagram at Danan Hughes. We are back, second quarter of the show, which is the hot fire, spit fire portion of our show. Dan and KCK, I see you. We'll get to you in the third quarter. Remember that the phone lines, text lines are open, 913-586-7695. Last week, I came with a strong take. Per the ultimate judge, the Simon Cowell of Odyssey in Julio. And I'm going to recap one of those because I feel like I'm going to add a little bit to it. Coach of the Year. Part of this is a question that I want to pose to the text lines and the phone lines in regard before I get into the meat of it. What's tougher? Coaching a team that goes from 4-13 to 11-6, or coaching greatness consistently to stay great? I think that's a major question that should be asked of anyone that has a vote in Coach of the Year. And I feel like there's an argument for each side. But the fact remains, I ask that question, I really am interested in listeners' answer to that. Greatness and staying great and coaching greatness, even with great players, is that tougher or easier than coaching a bad team or a subpar team to being above average? Now, if a team is 2-15 and they flip it to 15-2, you got no arguments from me. That is a whole different animal that we're discussing. But I'm talking about a below average team, 5-12, 4-13, and then they turn it around, maybe win their division or get a playoff berth the next year, but they're only 11-6, maybe 12-5. They acquired a great talent. Maybe they acquired they had some injuries the year before, and they're injury free this year. If you notice, there's a theme with those two examples that I'm talking about in Dan Quinn with the Washington Commanders, and Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions, Andy Reid with the Kansas City Chiefs, and Kevin O'Connell with the Minnesota Vikings. I feel like those are the four coaches that are on the main list of Coach of the Year. Depending on what your answer is to those two questions, should be what your answer would be if you had a vote for Coach of the Year. I am on the side, I am of the school of thought that it is absolutely tougher to coach greatness consistently. Some people may differ. Here's why. The Washington Commanders, I'm saying they have a great argument. Dan Quinn, you get a rookie quarterback. Your plus minus, I want to say, is 6 or 7 on the season from last year. I didn't even, my screen went blank, so I don't have it in front of me. What your wins were last year, you get Jaden Daniels, guys are healthy, and you are put yourself in a position to be second in the NFC East and playing in the playoffs. Great. Great accomplishment. Kevin O'Connell, a little bit different in that great accomplishment this year, 14-3 on the season. Last year, you lost Justin Jefferson in our game and for most of the rest of the season, and therefore you warranted having to draft a quarterback in J.J. McCarthy, not having a subpar season. And then what was different this year is that you subbed out Kirk Cousins. You got Sam Darnold and a healthy Justin Jefferson for the entire season, and you're 14-3. Now, in conventional thoughts, you would say people would think, oh, he did a bad job coaching last year, or not a good job coaching last year, and he did a great job coaching this year. So then therefore he should warrant Coach of the Year accolades. Could it be that he did the same job, but he just lost one of the top, if not the top receiver in the NFL last year, and that basically showed itself in the record, again, having to face the AFC West, having to face Patrick Mahomes and the Super Bowl champs. That didn't help them as well. Now you go into Dan Campbell and Andy Reid. Great last year, great this year. Which of those four makes the most sense? I would venture to believe, I'm going to be a little biased here, and I've had this argument with some of my friends, Andy Reid's accomplishments are way, way, way overlooked, in part because of the greatness he's had. And that greatness is not just here in Kansas City, but even overlooked when he was with the Philadelphia Eagles and had Donovan McNabb and the greatness that they had where they went to 5 NFC championships and a Super Bowl, but lost. How can Andy Reid, with his great resume, have only won the Coach of the Year one time in his resume? And I'm not even going to go all the way back to the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's just go to the years here in Kansas City. He's only had one season where he's had less than double-digit wins. He took a team that was 2-14, came in as a head coach, and went 11-5. How come that didn't warrant Coach of the Year? If the measurement, and you're on that side of the fence of going from below average to above average, not great, but above average, how come he didn't win it that year? Then subsequently, going 9-7 the next year, missing the playoffs, the only time he did, and then every year since, being 11 wins, 12 wins, 10 wins, 12, 12, 14, 12, 14, 11, and 15. A plus 5, I should say a plus 4 in his win totals from last year's Super Bowl team to this year. You can't tell me that at some way, in some place down on that list, he shouldn't have garnered a Coach of the Year award. And I believe this year, after winning 2 straight Super Bowls, playing the most games in the last half decade, having to withstand the schedule that I mentioned in quarter one of this show, 3 games in 11 days, winning all 3, securing the number 1 seed when you're getting the best and strongest bullets from everyone, only lose technically losing two games, but only really losing one game, against the other team that's supposed to be great in this in the AFC conference and a rival that you beat on the road in the playoffs. How in the world is he down on the list in the coach of the year? So my hot fire, spitfire take, don't overlook Andy Reid. Stop overlooking Andy Reid. Stop discrediting his greatness because he has great players, which is an argument that I've heard from people. Well, he's got the greatest quarterback. He's got the greatest tight end. He's got a great defensive lineman. And the expectations should be as such. Stop overlooking his greatness. Stop elevating other people's greatness for an opposite argument that never applied to Andy Reid when he was when he had a below average team and then catapulted them to above average. It didn't work for him then. Now, as he's shown that he can keep greatness great, it's not showing for him now. There's a bias against Andy Reid, and I hate it. That one got my blood boiling there, Julio. Sure, I got to take a break. So when we come back, we got the phone lines, text lines open. Remember, 913-586-7695. I see you, Jake. I see you, Dan. We also got some text messages we'll tackle next.
You're listening to Players Only with Dan and Hughes on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
All right, we are back. Players Only. Halftime is over. I am your host, Danon Hughes. Again, follow me on Twitter/X at DAHughesGuy83 or on Instagram at Danon Hughes. We got the phone lines, text lines open. Got a couple of doozies. I appreciate Dan from KCK is always that infusion of energy. Bring it strong, Dan. What's going on, brother?
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Yeah, it wasn't the game we wanted, but hey, the backups got what they wanted. They got some playing time. I think the backups, even though the score wasn't the way we wanted, they played pretty good. You know, offense, defense, special teams, they did a pretty decent job. But for the Bengals fans to say, Dan, that the Chiefs threw the game because they didn't want to see him, I don't buy it. And I'm glad Travis went on the podcast with Jason and said, we'll play him here or we'll play him in the parking lot at Walmart. So it didn't matter. And what did you think about Tyreek quitting on the Dolphins in the fourth quarter? Well, I heard he saw the game on the big screen at MetLife, and when the Chiefs knew they were going to come back, and he decided not to play, and then he told the press that he's true with the Dolphins. I disagree on that. You know, I think he should come back for another two seasons because he should sign to do 2026. And what do you think about the Raiders firing Antonio Pierce? I think he did a decent job, and they fired Tony Telesco, the general manager, today. Take care of something. Let's take care of the Broncos, Steelers, or the Chargers in 2 weeks. Take care.
All right. Appreciate you, Dan. A lot of great stuff there. I appreciate the energy as well. Answering your questions, I thought it was extremely ignorant and immature for Tyreek Hill to quit on his team, especially when you're talking about, I think I saw the clip today where his teammates were asking if he was done, and it was the third quarter, and I think they were only down by 12. So the fact that he quit on the team in the third quarter in a winnable game, in a winnable situation, I don't know if he saw on the scoreboard because we were playing the same time as them that we were losing, and he just assumed, well, regardless of whether they win or lose, he didn't want to go out there and risk injury, whatever is going through his head. The fact remains is those players in the locker room will remember that. And as talented as he is, It's not just something that impacts him now on that team. You go in the post-game press conference, talk crazily like he did, doesn't just impact him now. We have the Chiefs ambassadors here in Kansas City. There's 59 of us that played for the Chiefs for at least 3 years. We get together at least once a month. We do a lot of charity, a lot of speaking engagements, public appearances around the Chiefs kingdom. Still connected to the organization, and everybody is in incredible standing with the organization, in part because they gave everything they had every single time they were on the field. We got Hall of Famers like Bobby Bell, and then you got guys that just played 3 years, maybe backup offensive linemen, backup receivers, you know, heck, even like me, six-year special team guy that played on the team. We got 60 years of Chiefs football, one guy that played for the Dallas Texans and Jerry Cornelison that's part of this group. We can look each other in the eye and know when we see guys walking around bad hips, bad knees, reconstructive surgeries, helping them from place to place, guys driving each other to events. The one thing we can do is look at each other and have 100% respect for their sacrifice for our team and our organization, whether we played with them or not. When you have guys like Tyreek making decisions like he did, talking about himself, his family, making decisions for himself, you don't have that glue. And he's going to recognize it at some point. And fortunately, he'll probably have teammates and buddies that will forgive him. But I can tell you it's a bad, bad mark, bad decision. It shows a lot of immaturity. And it was basically disappointing to me because I'm a Tyreek Hill fan, just like I think most football fans are. So hopefully he can make amends to that and grow from this situation. But it was definitely immature and definitely ignorant. So appreciate that. Antonio Pierce with the Raiders just being Raiders. Antonio Pierce didn't show any signs that he had lost the team. And making the decision after he did his press conference, after and then the GM the following day just shows some dysfunction there. We'll see it. But again, we're not going to complain because if they're going to continue to be doormats in the AFC West and they can play us tight and tough, but we win the games. That's all that matters here as far as I'm concerned. All right. Jake in Lawrence, what's good?
Hey, Damon. I want to get back to the Coach of the Year discussion. But first, I just want to say I'm incredibly pumped to listen to you and Mitch and Klinger on the playoffs broadcast here.
Appreciate it.
In a couple of weeks. It's going to be great. But, you know, back on the subject of the Coach of the Year discussion, bring a little common sense into it. One of the things about the NFL is that it is by structure design that the more you win, the harder it is to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're drafting later in the draft. You're playing the division winners from each other division in your conference. You've got three games right there that are against, you know, number one teams in their divisions from the previous season. You don't play a cupcake schedule like the teams that were the previous year's bottom feeders play. And I don't think that we should be, you know, giving a guy credit. I mean, you know, much love to what the Commanders are doing, but you just happened to hit on the quarterback of all of the rookies that got drafted that has had the most success in the NFL, that has the right mentality and can handle the speed of the game, because we always know that just because a guy shows out in college doesn't mean that's always going to translate to the NFL.
Yep.
Sometimes you get lucky. And I think that's what we see in Washington, is that they got lucky in their quarterback. But what we see out of Andy Reid is we see a guy that consistently, year after year, playing more games than any other team in the NFL does, drafting later than any other team in the NFL does, playing a harder schedule than any other team in the NFL does, continuing to be great, continuing to be the standard for what a successful franchise in the NFL looks like. So I think that, you know, in the words of what, as Mitch would say, that you can doubt them, you know, you can deny them, but you're going to have to deal with them.
That's right. Amen.
That's all I got.
Appreciate that, Jake. Definitely strong take there. I agree 100%. This team staying great, being great, even with great players, is extremely tough. I've coached sports. I've coached youth sports in the past. Obviously, I've been around a lot of sports. I played professional sports for baseball and football. Grew up playing three sports, adding basketball in there. I've been around a lot of different coaches. I've been able to assess coaches and be an analyst in all three sports at the college level and the pro level. And I can tell you from my experience, the toughest coaching jobs is usually the most talented rosters. Because even from a youth level, if you have kids out there, those kids that are exceptional as youth, usually, one, they might not be the hardest workers. But two, to their defense, they've never had to be the hardest workers because they were naturally talented. So coaching them up to where they need to be later when the talent catches up to them and the size of others catch up to them is the hardest task that a coach has to deal with. And the easy task is the mid-talent kid that knows that he has to grind, the blue-collar kid that you're coaching from 10 years old all the way up through high school, he's going to be the easiest one because he knows, he sees that he's behind the eight ball. He knows that work is the only way he can get it done. Well, that's the same at the pro level. The toughest coaching is having the great players and having them believe in you and your coaching, that even though they're great, here's a way to stay great. And Andy Reid has done that better than anyone. All right, Big T and Shawnee, what's good, bro?
Yeah, hey, Dan. Thanks for taking my call. Great stuff tonight. So I want to touch on the Bengals really quick. Only loser fans and loser teams can blame the referees and expect other teams to help them. That's a loser mentality. You got to take care of business, and you didn't do that. Great stuff on Andy Reid. I love the numbers. I agree with you. He should have had a coach of the year by now. And I got some numbers for you, and this is why I'm rolling with the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes in 18 games is 15-3 in the playoffs with a passer rating of 105.8 with 5,135 yards, 41 TDs, and 8 interceptions. Woo! That's why I'm rolling with that guy. And the other badass mofo, Travis Kelce, 165 catches, 19 TDs, 1,903 yards. The guy just takes care of business in the playoffs. Since 2019, he's averaging 3.4 TDs in the tournament. Go Chiefs. Whoever comes into Arrowhead, you're going to have a tall mountain to climb. It ain't going to happen. And I'm rolling with the three-peat. And as always, let's go Chiefs.
Appreciate you, Big T. Definitely some great numbers. Food for thought for everyone. Just want to add to that for this year. When you talk about a team getting better, you guys have heard me on the airwaves, on this show, during the broadcast, and I've said it every single season. This is my fifth season in the booth. I don't care about being the best team in September, October, or November. I want to be the team that's getting better in December and showing greatness towards the end of December and January. This Chiefs team has not turned the football over. When you talk about the giveaway takeaway, last year was an anomaly. It was a freak of nature that at minus 11, giving away the ball 11 more times and taking it away, that you made not only made the playoffs, but actually won a Super Bowl. That is unheard of in NFL history. Giving the ball away 11 more times and taking it away and getting to the playoffs, never mind the Super Bowl. This year didn't start very well, started on the same path. But this Chiefs team has not turned the ball over. And this is adding in the Denver Bronco game when you had Carson Wentz and a bunch of backups on the field for the entire 60 minutes. They have not turned the ball over in the last seven games, which is the longest streak in team history without a turnover. In team history, have not turned the ball over in seven games. So many other tidbits that I put together as far as notes for this wild card weekend, season recaps, but that just goes to show you that not only do we have a great team, but we have a great team that has ascended and gotten better. There's obviously going to be some concern when you talk about players having off for over 2 weeks to end the season, if they're going to be as sharp as they need to be. Time will tell. I don't have any doubt in it. I think they're going to be stronger than maybe what we've seen thus far, especially when you talk about that same unit ending their season playing three games in 11 days. So we are in a great position right now. I feel like there's a lot of reasons to be positive and to be upbeat about this team regardless of who we play. We'll talk more in this fourth quarter coming up about the potential opponents. The text line for 913 Tyreek, I assume Tyreek won't be getting any golf tech deals in Kansas City. Okay, I got you. From the 573, the greatness we are witnessing from Kelce and Mahomes is because of Andy Reid. We've seen this year after year where great players are mediocre without a good coach. Definitely some meat to that. Definitely some credence to that. I would say that these guys would be great, but as far as great teams and being put in a position to be great on the field and to play to your successes and to your strengths. I don't know if another coach would bring that out of these guys, but I don't also want to minimize their greatness as well. So there's a fine line there, but I think we have two great guys that would be Hall of Famers no matter what, but would they have three Super Bowl wins and four Super Bowl appearances during the stretch? I don't think that that would be the case without a great coach and Andy Reid. And make no mistake about it, I don't want to leave out Matt Nagy and Steve Spagnuolo and David Merritt and all the assistant coaches, Andy Heck, Dave Tobe, all of these guys that have contributed that probably could have gotten opportunities elsewhere but wanted to stay around just like Chris Jones and several of the other players because they want to make history with a three-peat, and they are definitely on the right path right now. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about each of the lower seeds that could possibly come to GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. We'll start this week, and we'll come back next week and finish that up once we know who we're actually going to face.
You're listening to Players Only with Dana Hughes on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan. Did you realize
that you are a champion? All right, we are back for the final few minutes of Players Only. I am Dana Hughes. We talked about this Coach of the Year just to kind of add on a little icing on the cake and a little bit more to my argument. Andy Reid has now clinched the number one seed, and I'm sure people know this, 7 times in his career. He is tied for the most in NFL history to secure a number one seed. He's tied with Bill Belichick, obviously. How do you only win one Coach of the Year? If you just with that stat alone, I don't know. But fact remains, we know we got the greatest coach in the game of football and arguably in the history of this game. And we have an opportunity now to rest our guys. They'll be sitting on their couches. I'm sure the offensive linemen will be getting together, maybe eating some barbecue. Wide receivers will be getting together at somebody's house or restaurant, watching at least a couple of games to see not just being a football fan watching the NFC and AFC, but also getting a glimpse of what could be and who could be the opponents coming here to GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. Now, based on how the structure is in the NFL, the 2 seed plays the 7, the 3 seed plays the 6, the 4 plays the 5. If you have chalk that is accomplished where all the top seeds win, you would basically be put in a position where you would play the 4 seed. So ultimately, talking about the Ravens and the Bills this week and even next week on next Thursday's show doesn't really make sense. So it's really about everyone else and who could possibly be the opponent that has to come here. The Texans, I don't think they're the same team as they were earlier this season. A lot of question marks dealing with some injuries. They were a product of a pretty weak AFC South division that only has one team that has come out of that, which that's mandatory. One team has to win that division and come into the playoffs. They ended their season 10-7. I am of the school of thought that there should be reseeding as far as home field, at least for one game. I get the argument that if you win your division, regardless of how bad it is, you earn the right to host a game. But I feel like in this situation, maybe not so much, but there are others that we've seen where the Texans are 10-7, the Chargers are 11-6. Okay, I get it. But there have been times, and even in the NFC, where you have a 14-3 Minnesota Vikings team that has to go on the road. That doesn't make sense to me. But Texans, I feel like the Chargers, if we're asking about my predictions, Julio, I'm going to say Chargers, very strong defense, Justin Herbert playing extremely well with a strong complementary running game that Jim Harbaugh is leaning on, taking a lot of pressure off of him. He's shown some extra mobility and speed in the last games as well. So I'm going to say the Chargers go down there and win against the Houston Texans. So in that case, we could face the Chargers, but you also have the Broncos and the Buffalo Bills. My take, I said it earlier with Gold and Barbershop, that I think the upset of the weekend is going to be the Broncos beating the Bills. I think the Broncos, their defense is extremely strong, whether it's right, wrong, good or bad, overinflated, underinflated. The fact that they beat us 38-0 is going to be an infusion of energy. Even though we know we didn't have our best on the field, anytime you can beat a team 38-0, shut them out, you have some energy and some confidence that comes from that game. Going right into Buffalo, where a team like Buffalo that has been knocking on the door for several years, having a quarterback that has garnered some MVP votes, I don't believe he should win it over Lamar Jackson. That's a whole nother argument. But I could see that team playing close against the Broncos and Josh Allen starting to press during that game, even though he's been exceptional in the postseason and keeping the ball and not turning it over, I could see there being times in that game, especially late, where he's going to press a little bit and the Broncos are going to take advantage of that. So with the weather being relatively nice, expected in Buffalo, I believe it's going to be around 40 degrees. They have no advantage there. So I'm going to pick them. And then Steelers-Ravens. Steelers have had Lamar Jackson's number. I'm still going to go with the Ravens. I think Lamar Jackson's going to win that game. Steelers losing four straight, 5 of 6. I don't think limping into the playoffs the way they did, they'll be able to reel it back in for a strong Ravens team with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. So for that, those are my AFC picks. We don't care about the NFC right now. Next week, we'll talk about our specific opponent. I'll get more into the greatness of this season. For Julio, I am Danon Hughes. We'll talk to you next week. This is Players Only. Have a great week. Peace. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. You're listening to Players Only with Danon Hughes on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.